This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. When schools fail, there are a number of options available to turn them around. One of them is a state takeover. The state government moves in to oversee its operations or assigns a private company to take over administrative duties. This has happened to several Indiana schools, and today we're going to talk about a few of them. As we move through it, feel free to jump in and let us know your thoughts, whether you've been directly affected by these takeovers or if you're in any way involved in education and have opinions about how this is being handled. Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, and we'll get your questions and comments to our live guest today. Joining me now is WFYI education reporter Eric Weddle. Thanks for joining us, Eric.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Let's start with this meeting that happened on Monday of this week in Gary, Indiana. Where did this meeting happen?
Sure. There was a meeting at the IU Northwest campus up there that was called by the State Board of Education. And the reason this meeting was called is basically Theodore Roosevelt Career and Technical High School, a high school up in Gary that we'll explain later on, but was taken over by the state in 2011. It's been shut down physically. Like, students can't go there anymore. Students have been moved to a new location, which isn't sustainable. And so basically, what we hear right now from Tony Walker, who's a member of the State Board of Education, he called this meeting basically because legally there had to be a hearing before a possible change can happen to the situation in Gary. And so he called a community meeting for all the stakeholders and parents and community members to be there to basically discuss what should happen to this school that really isn't physically open anymore, but there's still students enrolled in it, and the state still controls part of the operation. So this is what we heard from Mr. Walker.
So this is what we're doing here today, is have a public hearing talking about the future of Roosevelt. But what initiated it is my belief that the state takeover of Roosevelt that began in 2011 should terminate. And that is my intention at our January meeting, is to bring an action and a motion for the board to vote on to actually end the State Board of Education's involvement with Roosevelt College and Career Academy. Now, that doesn't necessarily solve all the problems, but what it does is it clears us out of the way.
So there's a pretty long history to this in Gary. How'd we get here?
Yeah, I mean, the history, you know, it's very layered. It's very complex. So it's kind of, you had to be kind of careful explaining it for people who aren't even aware of it, because there's so many layers to it. So in 2011, you know, the state of Indiana, the state school chief, Tony Bennett, and others realized that they wanted to do something about schools that were failing in Indiana. And there were a number of schools that were failing. And they ended up basically picking five schools that had been graded F or had been in failure for 6 years or more consecutively. And Gary Roosevelt was one of those schools. There were four other schools in Indianapolis as well. And we'll get to those, I guess, later on. But the State Board of Education, they voted to say, due to your academic failure, we're going to take you over, and then we're going to hire a private company to run you. And so basically, we're going to sever local control. Local school board, local school district, Gary Community School Corporation no longer has say over what goes on here. And so the state hired this company called Edison Learning. They're a for-profit education company now based in Florida. And they basically were given a contract to run this school and basically improve it. And so that's what they have been doing for those years. Along the way, there's been a lot of fighting back and forth between Gary Community School District and the company over just, you know, financial things, and also the state of that building, which is a very old, it's a historic building. And it's kind of gotten this point now where the students can no longer safely attend school inside that building.
How did they choose Edison as the company to run it?
There was basically a call out, a national call out by the state of Indiana, and various people applied. A local company in town applied, and they took over Arlington High School. And then Edison was one of the companies that was interested in Gary School, and that's what they were given.
What is this about the state taking over the Gary School Corporation in 2017.
And that's kind of, I think, what makes this complex is the State Board of Education took over Roosevelt for academic failure.
And this was one particular school.
This is one school, yes. And then in 2000, and then in the years that followed, Gary's Community School Corporation fell into a lot of debt. And in 2007, for the first time ever, the state lawmakers decided to then take over the district, the actual, like, the operations of the entire school district.
2017.
In 2017. And then they hired a private company called MGT, which is also from Florida, to basically come in and then kind of get an emergency manager is the name of that person, who now, like, runs the school with pretty much full authority, the district. And with the – with, like, the – their goal was to basically cut the debt, make it sustainable. And the district was in $100 million of debt. They owed the IRS millions and millions of dollars. They owed the power companies millions of dollars. And so in the past, you know, 2 years since that's happened, they've actually been able to chip away. I will say, you know, chip away because we're talking tens and tens of millions of dollars. But they've been able to actually reduce some of that debt. The biggest – I think one of the bigger things they've done is they were able to get a deal with the IRS, which now they don't have to pay the IRS. And the what makes that important is the IRS had liens on unused buildings in Gary, school buildings. Mm. There's more than 30 of them actually.
Wow.
Due to the enrollment decline. And now Gary schools can't possibly sell those buildings. And then next year they're going to start that process to make those available for purchase.
So the issue with Roosevelt High School is sort of separate. Part of the Gary School Corporation, but it's a little different. And it seems like this all comes down to lack of enrollment in the district.
That's been enrollment, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but yeah, there's been a massive decline. Not enrollment only, but just in Gary, the population, you know, has gone down so much as industry has just left that area. And with that, property taxes, I mean, when there's people aren't living there and there's not industry, property taxes, which now fund our school, goes way down. And it's just been a pretty bleak situation. I mean, I don't think anyone there would describe it other than that. I mean, there's a lot of dedicated teachers there that I've met, parents who do not want to leave, who want to stay in the public school system. But, you know, the debt is just really hard to get out from under.
How much control does this private company that runs the Gary School Corporation have? And how does the state fit in?
Well, I think that's kind of the reason for this meeting the other night, was trying to let people understand the layers of this, because the State Board of Education is only in charge of, like, the academic of Roosevelt. But at the same time, you know, then this MGT, the emergency manager company, they kind of have some say over the actual physical building of that as well, or like making other buildings available to this company to keep running the school.
Mm. And were there improvements after this takeover happened?
I mean, if you look at the scores, you've seen some academic gains. But 2 years ago is kind of when physical problems in that building started causing school to not be held sometimes. There were breaks due to, like, the boiler breaking, cold weather, forced students not to be able to attend school. And if you look at the data, you've actually seen a pretty big drop in the achievements during that time period. Students not being able to finish standardized tests, the graduation rate, the most recent data, it's plummeted from what it kind of, you know, the gains it made are kind of gone in that area. Edison Learning, the company that runs it, they will argue that, you know, they are seeing academic growth, which is kind of saying a student from year to year, the same student, is showing that they've learned a higher rate of learning than on average. So they're going to point to that data saying, hey, we're having successes, but we're also getting students in our school that are under grade level, which means they don't know what they should know when they attend school. So, but I mean, I think there's a debate. I think the State Board of Education members feel like academics aren't where they should be today.
Let's talk about the infrastructure problems that have plagued Gary Roosevelt High School. What's happened to the building there?
Yeah, I mean, it's just old building that, you know, most of the buildings in the Gary School Community Corporation do the financial problems they haven't been able to fix. In March of this year, you know, we had the polar vortex storm come in, sub-zero temperatures, the pipes burst in Gary Roosevelt. The number people are saying now is $10 million on the low end is the cost to repair that. But when that happened, the students were displaced from the building. The building is not in use. So they had to be moved to an alternative location for that time.
Where are they now?
They are now at the Gary Area Career Center, which is part of the Gary Community Corporation, and is kind of where other Gary students and maybe some local charter school students go there for some of the day to learn different kind of technical skills. So they had space in that building that they were able to let the remaining students from Edison move into that space and have classes. And that's also caused a lot of concern by members of the state board and members of the public who have kind of been troubled by this.
Does it seem like the space they're in now has been suitable?
I mean, I think that's, you know, debatable. You know, we heard from the state board member, Tony Walker, you know, who was very concerned about the situation. You know, a few months ago, he was talking about how students were being taught in a garage, you know, and that kind of got a lot of media attention. I was able to go there this week and actually get a quick tour of the place. And, you know, it's a normal old kind of school building that does have some bay areas where technical skills would normally be taught, but they are using these areas, two areas, for classroom learning. When I was there, it was very warm in that building, but I guess recently it was so cold that they couldn't have students in these areas. Mm. So, and the private companies managing the school and the district are kind of working on that issue right now as it's going to get colder.
And there's been public response about this since then.
Yeah, I mean, people are just frustrated. You know, I mean, we can play a little sound from some people at this meeting I was at, and I think the real big concern is like, what's the future for, you know, for our students at the school? You know, the enrollment for, you know, Roosevelt has shrunk in the past year, this current school year. And we're going to hear right now from an alumni from the school, Mary Causey. And she is basically talking to the principal of Roosevelt, whose name is Josh Batchelor, and then we'll hear from someone after that. But I mean, but basically in this discussion, you're going to kind of hear those concerns of what they have.
You guys did your part, but we still have questions of Edison Learning. And that, at the end of the day, to me, is most important. We have 100 and how many kids? What you guys are trying to do is important, but I don't want to get into the politics of whether it's the state board makes that decision to give it back to the district or give it to Edison. For me, I want to know, what is the plan for our kids for the rest of this year?
So will they graduate? Yes.
Would
they be at the Career Center for the rest of the year? Yes, they will. Do we have plans as far as what the rest of the year will look like, as far as athletics and all of that, and academics? Yes. Yes, ma'am, we do. We're not moving our location.
So here's a question, because just last week in the bays, you guys couldn't have classes in the bays because it was so cold and you had to do alternative classrooms.
Correct.
Is that going to continue? Because we got a long winter ahead of us.
So that's one of the things that I just spoke of actually.
We'll have more with education reporter Eric Weddle next on the state takeover of a school in Gary. This is All In. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to our conversation on troubled schools in Indiana, I want to quickly mention our last show. Local Morning Edition host Stan Sollers, whose voice should be familiar to East Central Indiana, was recently declared cured of esophageal cancer. Sollers joined us to talk about overcoming a 5-year battle with the disease, and you can find that show and all our shows wherever you get podcasts. Just search for All In. Today we're talking about some of the long, complicated histories behind schools in Gary, and later we'll talk about Indianapolis. As always, we'd love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. In the studio, we're joined again by Eric Weddle. He's been reporting on this for a long time now. Thanks again for taking the time.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen next year with Roosevelt High School?
Well, yeah. So, you know, like I said, I think before, the enrollment has been shrinking at the students who are enrolled in Roosevelt. And right now they're at the Gary Career Center, which they kind of were when they got displaced. That space, they can be in that for this school academic year. But next academic year, there's no more space for them. There's going to be other classes moving in there. So where they will be, no one knows. And that was kind of some of the concern at that meeting. I do know Monday I wasn't able to go on this tour. They wouldn't let me. But all the representatives from the state and these companies kind of toured other possible locations within Gary Community School Corporation that maybe Edison students could be moved to if that's what the state kind of decides the future should be.
And this is kind of an aside. Has this displaced the students that would otherwise be at this career center, or was this career center kind of not really doing that?
There was enough space there for this school year for them to be there, yeah.
Okay. And so what is the charter group that is is running Roosevelt plan to do about this, what is it, estimated $10 million
right.
infrastructure
yeah.
problem?
So Edison Learning is a private company, and they do run charter schools other places, but right now they are not running a charter school, just so people understand. They're running a school under a state contract. Mm. It's called a special operator, basically. So their plan that they kind of came out with in the past week is that they want to get $25 million in private investment money to create a charter school called Roosevelt RISE Academy. And RISE would be – it stands for Renewable Industries for Sustainable Energy. And that would be the focus. It would be an environmental science focus. They wanted to be a K-12 school. And they're saying they're going to take this money and basically re-overhaul Roosevelt School into this top-of-the-line, world-class environmental science charter school. And I think a lot of people were surprised that that kind of money would be available. They haven't really said who is behind the money other than it's an Atlanta-based investment firm that is working with them and that they wouldn't have announced this unless they thought it was a good chance it would happen. So that's their proposal.
This seems like it kind of came out of nowhere. Is that kind of the sentiment of everyone else?
I think for the public, possibly. I've heard from state officials that there's been talk over a while about this. You know, what makes it interesting is, and this is kind of one of those complex layers of the story, is two years ago, this private company and the Gary School Corporation, prior to its state takeover for budget issues, they signed a deal that kind of allowed them to kind of work together to run Roosevelt High School, called an innovation agreement contract. And that contract still has a few more years on it. So I think people are a little bit surprised that they were now trying to kind of do something a little bit totally different than what they had agreed with previously with the school district.
So have you heard any reactions to this proposed plan?
Well, yeah. I mean, at this meeting, a lot of people were discussing it. I mean, some in the room thought, that's what we need. You know, we'd love to have this kind of investment in Gary. And there were some families who are for it, some totally against it, who just want Edison out of there. Other people, they just do not know. Someone who was in the meeting who had a lot to say was Vernon Smith. He's a state representative from Gary. No fan of school reform or charter schools, I should say. So what you're going to hear from him, you know, isn't a surprise. But, you know, this is what he said after the private company kind of said, this is our plan to invest $25 million into a new charter school.
But let me just tell you, I think we're confusing the focus. I thought the focus of us being here today was decide immediately what we got to do with the situation with Roosevelt being in the Career Center. Not about a charter school, a new plan. I'm opposed to that. So let's not lose our focus. But if we did talk about a $25 million investment, where's the money going to come from? I would argue it should not come from Gary to support a business effort which is not locally and community owned. I would have a problem with that.
And we don't have any indication really as to where that money might be coming from.
I mean, all they've said publicly is it's an Atlanta investment firm is going to get private money, philanthropic dollars that would come to this to Gary.
And so next month the State Board of Education is going to they're going to debate this issue in Gary. Could any action?
The meeting will be in Indianapolis.
In Indianapolis.
Yeah. The whole reason this meeting was held was it was a quote-unquote public hearing to kind of say next month Tony Walker, the state board member from Gary, is going to call an agenda item to the board and say – and his item is basically today let's end state board's involvement in Gary. Mm. We're no longer going to have any oversight of Gary Roosevelt High School. Let's let everyone else there, MGT, the private company, the school corporation, Edison, let them figure it out. Which kind of, you know, earlier we heard a cut from him saying, let's just get out of here and let the local people decide. And so that's what's going to be voted next month.
And what about possible outcomes?
I don't know. I mean, I think my reading, you know, from attending these board meetings and seeing these debates over school takeover, I think there's just a lot of frustration. Just that it's gone on as long as it has, and that maybe there does need to be more local, you know, control. And that's what we're going to talk about, I think, here in a few minutes with Indianapolis. But I really don't know what will happen. I don't know how the other board members are going to really see a Tony Walker's item. And maybe people will balk at it. The fact that he wants to do it immediately, there really wasn't any discussion there about, like, how that would work or the future plans or how that, you know, could impact students or Edison or anybody.
We've been talking about a school in Gary, Indiana, with education reporter Eric Weddle, and we're now going to shift to news about three schools in Indianapolis. And some of this situation is similar to Gary, but a lot of the details are pretty different. To start, can you explain what these three schools are and the big news that broke about them last week?
Right. So the three schools we're talking about now are M. and Dunn Middle School, Thomas Carr Howe High School, and Emmerich Manuel High School. Those are three former Indianapolis Public School District schools that in 2011 the state board voted to take them over as well for academic failure for 6 years or more of academic failure. And they were all three given to the same private company that's based in Florida called Charter Schools USA. And that company has basically run those schools since then. Kind of what's happening right now with Gary, I just said, a year ago, the state board decided, you know, this has gone on long enough. Let's end this takeover. And they basically have four options are in state law. And they could have shut the schools down. They could have given the schools back to IPS, Indianapolis Public School District, just said, you can have them back. They could have merged them with another school, which basically would mean they close it down. Or they could tell this private company, hey, you've done a good job. You can now go out and ask somebody else in the state to give you a charter school. You can run them as charter schools free of our intervention. And then you can, you know, do your own thing, basically.
A quick note before we kind of get back into it. We did invite representatives from IPS and Charter Schools USA to come on the show today, and we did not hear back. I want to know more about Charter Schools USA. What is this group?
Right. So, I mean, you know, one of the, if not the largest charter school operator in the country. They have schools in many states, and they're a for-profit company. They came here, you know, to run these schools. And I think as the head of the company, John Hage, will talk about that, they feel they've been scrutinized, they've been criticized, they face, you know, the most opposition from, you know, the community, from lawmakers, from different people. And they say despite that, they haven't left. They've stayed here. My reporting has found that they invested $5 million of their own money into the three schools that they say they will not be recouping at all. At a recent public meeting, John Hage said it was actually $10 million, which I haven't confirmed. But there's definitely been some investment, and they feel like they have improved these schools and that the state you know, should give them those schools. And you know, to follow up on what I was saying before about those four options, the state board told them to get charters. To go out and seek charters and to run them themselves. And so that's what they tried to do.
How did things go at these schools for the first few years after they were taken over?
Right. So, I mean, the first few years, you know, I think everyone agreed it was very rough. I mean, they came into these schools, which were some of the worst schools in the state, and they had a lot of trouble trying to, you know, write what was going on. And Charter Schools USA probably would not disagree. You know, there was a lot of fighting between the local school district and Charter Schools USA, a massive number of students, up to 35%, I believe, in some of the schools left those three schools before the company came in. So the enrollment plummeted when the takeover happened. And if you know how school funding works in Indiana, money follows a student. So a lot of those schools, you know, did not get the type of funding that they expected to get. And then there was this teacher turnover, just a lot of challenges for those first years.
I can imagine. What happened in 2015 with Emma Donnan Middle School?
So one of the things, when Charter Schools USA was actually hired originally, given the contracts to run these three schools, they had wanted to kind of create what they call a feeder system, which basically they're saying, if you give me a 7-8 middle school, Emma Donnan Middle School, how can you expect us to like improve the school if we're getting students for only 2 years and maybe they're coming in years behind academic level? So they, you know, so back then they wanted to like expand the schools to have more grades in them. The state said no. And then in 2015, they worked out a deal with IPS and the State Board of Education to basically expand Emma Donnan and create an elementary school. And so they worked with IPS to create what is called, and they were the first so-called Innovation Network school, which basically state law allows public school districts to partner with charter school companies or other outside groups to basically be managers for a school. So IPS gave them a contract to create Emma Donnan a K-6 school and to run that. So then those students who went through K-6, they would then go to the middle school, which was the takeover school. And the idea was if Charter Schools USA could teach these kids for multiple years, by the time they got out of Emma Donnan, you know, they would be improved. They'd have good academic success.
Hmm. And so last year, the state board decided to end these takeovers?
Right. So last year, the State Board of Education kind of decided, you know, this has gone on long enough. We need to exit this somehow. And so, like I said before, there was these four options to do that. And they created this task force that had people from the community, a number of people from Charter Schools USA schools, and someone from IPS, and a neighborhood group down in Garfield Park. And they spent a number of months doing research and going having meetings. And then they voted on those four options. Shut the schools down, return them to IPS, let Charter Schools USA make them in charters. And the majority of that panel voted to let Charter Schools USA run them as charters. IPS and a community member were the two no votes at that time. That recommendation went to the State Board of Education in March. And at that March meeting, IPS again asked, please do not approve this. We need to figure some things out. And the State Board went ahead and told Charter Schools USA to run these schools as charters. So go out to another state body and apply for charters. And that would effectively end the takeover in June 2020.
And what happened after that panel reported back? Or have we gotten there yet?
Yeah. So yeah.
In the timeline?
It is confusing. So yeah, so that panel reported back in March, and the State Board of Education, who controls the schools, accepted that recommendation.
Mm, okay. What does IPS say that they want to happen to these schools right now?
Well, so it's important, you know, to go back, I guess, you know, a year or so when the former superintendent, Louis Farabee, was still here. Mm-hmm. You know, he has since left and went to Washington, D.C. schools. When he was here, they were trying to figure out what to do with all IPS high schools. And during that process, when some schools were closed down, the Farabee and the board at that time agreed that if they got back Howe or Manual, they would shut them down. Mm. They were trying to consolidate schools, trying to save money. They didn't need that extra space if that did happen. Farabee left in December. There was also an election last November. Some board members changed. And so thinking started changing at the district. Maybe we want these buildings. Alicia Johnson was named interim superintendent at the time when the state board voted on this. It appeared some board members really didn't want to take her word for what the district was saying since she wasn't the superintendent yet. She has become a superintendent, and she has in the past past month or so really taken a hard stance that IPS wants those schools back. They do not want to work with Charter Schools USA, and they think that they should get them back.
And what have you heard from parents and community members about what should happen to these three schools?
Well, I mean, you know, I think it all kind of was building up, you know, to last was it last week? Recently, the state Charter School Board, you know, voted on this issue. If Charter Schools USA should get these charters. And as that ramped up that vote, you know, we started hearing a lot of different voices, some against the charters. And the families at the schools, they have seemed to be very much for it. You know, I think if you meet these families at these three schools, they want the schools to stay the same as they are. Mm. There's a lot of bad feelings about IPS from how things were 8 years ago. And the people I've talked to, it's hard to shake that off. And I think the district knows that it's really hard to shake off some of these feelings of how the schools are run. So there kind of became a division between people in the community wanting IPS back in charge and a lot of the school people wanting the school to stay the same before that board vote happened last week.
What is the Indiana Charter School Board?
Right. So the Indiana Charter School Board so in Indiana, to be a charter school, you have to have someone authorize you a charter, and different people in the state do that. The Indianapolis Mayor's Office does it. Ball State does it. And the Indiana state government has created its own charter board, and there's 9 members currently that are appointed from various elected officials. And they are the ones who vote whether to grant an organization, a nonprofit organization, the right to have a charter. Usually based on a number of years, 5 years, 3 years, and then they can legally open up a public charter school.
And they voted on whether to give charters to these three schools?
Charter Schools USA, a group associated with them applied for the charters. The staff of the charter school board recommended that they approve the charters, all three of them. They said Emma Donnan, Howe Emanuel should be run by this group associated with Charter Schools USA as charters starting in July 2020. When the meeting from that point on, the board was going to vote on these three charters. Two members at the last minute had to cancel attending the meeting, one for work, one for a medical thing in the family, leaving seven members. And each charter was voted down in a 4-3 vote, which I think people, they were very surprised of, since the staff had recommended they be approved, and they voted against that.
Why does it look like the vote went that way? We've only got about 30 seconds left, but I'm curious.
There's a lot of issues that were discussed for each school individually. And I think one of the big issues that we can get into is like the issue related to the buildings that those schools operate in. But there were definitely concerns of whether this was the best way to manage, you know, Indianapolis schools district. Should this board be the ones to decide that they're going to lose these possibly three buildings and then have these students attending other schools instead of attending IPS schools, and how that could affect the district financially?
We've been talking about school takeovers with education reporter Eric Weddle from our Indianapolis affiliate WFYI. And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. What could happen to these schools? We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on charter school operators and the current situation with three schools in Indianapolis. We're joined again by Eric Weddle, education reporter at WFYI in Indianapolis. And when we left off, we were talking about the Indiana Charter School Board and the vote that took place. Let's recap that, Eric.
Right. So the State Board of Education oversees the takeover of these schools. And earlier this year, they made a recommendation for the private company running the three Indianapolis schools that they should go out to an authorizer, such as the Indiana Charter School Board, and apply to them to receive a charter for each of the schools. Mm. And this would allow them to basically run the schools as a public charter school without any intervention. The State Charter School Board staff recommended to approve those charters. But in the end, the board members, 7 of 9 were at the meeting, voted 4-3 against approving the charters for each, which now creates, you know, a lot of uncertainty for what's going to happen.
Yeah, what could that mean? What could happen because of this no vote?
Well, basically, next month the State Board of Education is going to have to deal with this again. You know, it's going to be back in their hands. IPS has said that they want the schools back. They have some plans for two of the schools that they're kind of talking about. They've kind of gotten out in front of that vote. Explain that. Charter Schools USA really hasn't said, what they want to do. But, I'd like to play some sound from John Hage to kind of, give you an idea of like how they feel that they've done. They wouldn't really talk to me or anyone after that meeting, after that no vote came in. They did release some statements that came out that seemed to allude to the fact that they believe they still have, the favor with some state officials to go after these charters. And so this is what John Hage told the Charter School Board before the vote.
We took on the task of taking over existing failing schools that had failed for at least 6 continuous years and had done so in such a way that they were not just failing academically, but they were failing in every category. So much so that when we took over the schools, we were surprised by how much the facilities had degraded, how much the community had lost heart, and how much these schools had really fallen from their former grace. As you know, Manuel has graduated former senators and governors of this state, as well as Howe, and has a great history, but those schools had lost that great history. So we felt like this was an opportunity to do something unique and different and hard, and to really focus on students that had been forgotten in many cases and a community that had been left behind.
And we talked a little bit about how much money Charter Schools USA has spent to run these three schools. And they're how invested are they again?
Well, so I've confirmed that they've spent more than $5 million of their own money. Mm. It's also important to point out that they've also been the benefit of more than $20 million in federal school improvement grants, which is money that goes to the lowest performing schools. All the schools taken over by the state, all five of them, received a chunk of these dollars since 2011. So I think what some people are concerned about, too, is the fact that they had to spend their own money when they were receiving additional money. They just didn't have enough money to run these schools. Could they run them if they ran them as charters mm-hmm. without that extra special federal funding? They submitted documents saying that they could do it. But I'd like to play one more piece of sound from a member of the Charter School Board, Leslie Dillon, who she voted against approving the charters. She's also from Gary. So if you were listening earlier, you know this troubles that are there. She actually works for the school corporation there. So she's kind of then responding to some of those concerns and why she voted no.
But I'm here to encourage this community that this is not the final say for your babies. My answer is no, because I also have to think about the financial hit that could come not only to your community but to somebody else's if IPS is stuck with a heavy financial load. That means other people's children are also affected. That's one of the biggest mistakes about adults. We get so passionate about our own, we forget about other people, what our decisions can affect the people we never see. That has happened to my community because a lot of decisions have been made that have directly affected Gary, Indiana. Nobody cared. But we're still standing. And so you will be blessed for your passion, but you won't be blessed if you split your community.
I guess what I would like to understand is takeovers happen because there are problems, mm-hmm. and the takeovers happen because the problems need to be turned around. The exit strategy, I would guess, at a broad level, is that after the takeover happens and is, I guess, successful, mm-hmm. the plan is always to return it back to the local school corporation, right? Or do they even have the luxury of thinking that far ahead?
I think that's been the big problem that is even it was amplified 2 years ago. I think it's amplified more than ever now. Is no one really knows how to do this seamlessly. You know, I don't think a lot of people really expected. I'm sure some did, but I don't think people expected the state charter school board to vote no on all three of those schools, kind of throwing up again this uncertainty for all these families. 1,700 students at those three schools combined. What's going to happen to them? You know, the state thought they had a process to kind of have an easy transition out of this intervention. But I think it's going to show in Gary and in Indianapolis, it's not that simple. Mm. And things have changed. You know, people think differently now. There's different partnerships that exist. You know, people feel differently. And it's been, you know, almost 8 years. So there's a lot of data to go through, too.
Yeah. And so this continues. This is happening in Gary. This is happening in Indianapolis. And it seems like the takeover has not shown the kinds of results that the local administration would like to see. And they think that they can do it better. Is that kind of how it's shaking out?
That's how it is, too. And I think even at the state level, I mean, their laws have been changed since 2011 when this happened that gives the local authorities, local school districts, more of an incentive to take control sooner. Mm. So, you know, I mentioned before you get taken over. These schools were taken over because they had 6 years of Fs. Well, now it's 4 years of Fs. Mm. And the reason behind that was they thought, well, if it's 4 years, local school districts are going to do something on their own. Mm. They may hire someone on their own to come in and assist or help. And some school districts have done that. I mean, IPS has stopped the takeover of some schools by acting quicker and hiring their own outside partners to work with schools. But yeah, I think right now a lot of people, and I think we heard that in the start of this program from a member of the State Board of Education, Tony Walker, where he says, let's have the state board get out of this, let the locals to figure out what's best for them.
Can you explain what the Noble Ed Initiative is?
Noble Education Initiative, they are basically who runs the three schools now, Emma Donnan, Manuel, and Howe. So Charter Schools USA, they are a for-profit company. And as John Hay just told me a few times, you know, they're criticized for that. People think that they have, you know, for-profit, you know, plants, mm-hmm. which as and a interest. For-profit company,
yeah.
yes, you would to a degree. So Noble Education Initiative was a nonprofit company that was started by Sherry Hage, who is his wife and also was the chief academic officer of Charter Schools USA. Sherry has really focused on these three schools for a number of years. So this new company kind of became a subcontractor of Charter Schools USA to manage the school's day-to-day operations. And if you're in the schools, that's what the students and staff know. Noble Education Initiative is the one who's running the schools. They know that there. And so if these charters were approved, that's who would run the schools, not Charter Schools USA, but Noble Education Initiative. Some people question, how separate are they? But they are legally separate corporations. I've seen the paperwork. The husband and wife, they are not involved legally in the other businesses. So that's who would run the schools. And it's kind of been confusing to talk about it because a lot of people just know Charter Schools USA because they're known nationally. So people kind of refer to them as running the schools, the charter schools, when actually it would be this other company, which people call NEI.
This just adds another layer.
It's another layer.
Yeah. And raises eyebrows, too, especially. And there's a connection between the Noble Ed Initiative and the State Board of Education, right?
Yeah. And, and this is kind of where you can – it's more layers. There is a State Board of Education member whose name is Byron Ernest, and he actually was the principal of Manual High School during the takeover. And he actually got that school under his watch out of an F grade. He was the first one to turn around one of those schools, basically. Hmm. He went on to other work then. He now works for Noble Education Initiative again in a national context. The State Ethics Panel has approved him to have that job despite the state contract that's in there. And basically, he doesn't – at board meetings when this is discussed, he just disappears. He doesn't vote. He's not there. And so the state ethics panel has allowed that.
What are innovation schools and how did they play into all this?
Right. So if you remember, 10 minutes ago, we were talking about how IPS and Charter Schools USA partnered together to make this K-6 Emma Donnan School to kind of create this pipeline to help the middle school. That was an innovation school, and that's that contract that allows a public school district to partner with a company to open a school, create a school, manage a school. Mm. That was one of the first contracts IPS signed in 2015. The renewal came up right now, and kind of out of nowhere last month, IPS said, we are not renewing this contract. We don't think Charter Schools USA did a good job at Emma Donnan. We don't want them running the school. And then they actually named their own partners that they want to take the school over. That's kind of what started to change the trajectory of this whole process when IPS kind of ended that contract.
Hmm. And how did politics play into all this?
It is a political issue. In 2011, Tony Bennett, the state superintendent of education at that time, he was doing a lot of school reforms and takeover was one of them. And, people were really against it. The IPS school superintendent at that time, Eugene White, he opposed this as strong as he could. And I think you can see that in the fact that enrollment at those schools taken over dropped. Massive people left the schools, went to other IPS schools. So there's a lot of, politics on both sides against this process. Charter Schools USA, they had a close relationship with Mike Pence when he was governor. The only time I actually saw Mike Pence at a school, not to say he wasn't at other schools, but was at Manual High School. I was there twice, I think, when he did tours there. In Charter Schools USA, I think they have lawmakers who approve of school reforms. They've seen them as a leader. In this and in other states, they've done all kinds of different work. So the politics are there. The State Board of Education, the Charter School Board, they're appointed by elected officials who are Democrats and Republicans. So politics plays heavily into this. And, a lot of people, you could say a lot of liberals and a lot of people on that side are against this kind of intervention.
And we had Chalkbeat reporter Dylan Piers-McCoy on our show about a month ago to talk about the reporting that she did on one of these three schools, Emmerich Manual High School. Could that reporting have had some role on the decisions being made here?
Yeah. So, Dylan did this, fantastic reporting, finding about students who were being basically identified or exited out of school as attending homeschool, but people who were in like their senior year. So instead of graduating...
We're talking dropouts.
Dropouts,
people who are intending to drop out are being marked as exiting to homeschool.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Manual High School had the highest percentage of that in the state by far. You know, the issue has been discussed at the State Board of Education meeting and at the recent Indiana Charter Schools Board meeting, but only one member at the Charter Schools Board brought it up. John Hage basically has said, you know, it wasn't – they weren't doing it to, like, trick anybody. They weren't trying to inflate the graduation rate, which was – which increased due to those students not being dropouts. And that they've, you know, said that it's just, like, how they reported this. There's requirements that have caused them to report this way, and this is their data. I don't fully understand that. He told myself and another reporter he could provide an internal research document that they did about this topic. I still haven't seen that to explain it. But I think that, you know, while it might not have been discussed publicly at these meetings, I think behind the scenes it has troubled state officials that I've talked to, you know, on and off the record about it.
And one broader issue behind some of this concerns, a law in Indiana that means schools can be bought for $1 under certain circumstances. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So how long do we have left? No, I'm joking. So this law was passed that, you know, a number of years ago that basically said if a public school district stops using a school, they no longer have use for it, you know, for whatever reason, a charter school has the option to purchase it or lease it for $1. That's what's playing right now in with IPS and these three takeover schools, Emmendon and Manual and Howe. Because as the law is written, it says when a school exits takeover, if someone's going to make it a charter school, they can use this law as well. IPS is kind of questioning if that's even allowed. And, you know, this had never happened before. The law wasn't really written with all these questions in it or dealing with these issues. One issue for IPS is they have tens of millions of dollars in unpaid bonds on Howe and Manual. Emmendon and bonds are being paid off actually this month, I believe. So their concern is, could a charter school operator rent Howe, buy it for $1, and leaving IPS with this huge bill that they're still paying, the taxpayers are still paying off. That was kind of what was discussed at the Indiana Charter School Board meeting, and I think it led some of the members say to why they voted no, kind of what we'd heard from Leslie Dillon in that sound clip a little bit ago, because they don't know how this could impact IPS. And I don't think we're going to know next month when the state board takes this up either. It's still a big question mark. I was at a financial meeting of IPS's. Their financial board committee met. They discussed this for a long time. A lot of smart people in the room, and people are still trying to figure out what this could really mean for the district.
And what about the lawsuit that's been involved here?
Right. So very separate from what we've been talking about, takeover schools. West Lafayette School Superintendent Rocky Killian has filed a lawsuit saying that this law is unconstitutional. There was a school in West Lafayette that he thought a charter school may be interested in. Turned out they wasn't. But he's now filed a lawsuit. They're trying to make a class action lawsuit right now by getting taxpayers in West Lafayette to sign up for it. I guess we'll see how that goes next year if that gets into the court system.
So is it just going to move along the slow judicial
process?
Yeah.
I mean, I think tomorrow actually it might be the deadline for people to sign on to that lawsuit for a class action lawsuit. The idea behind that is the taxpayers are the ones who paid for that building, you know, to be there in the first place. So they have an interest of whether it is rented or sold for $1.
It is a dizzying saga, to say the least, but we really appreciate your helping us unpack it all.
Sure.
Education reporter Eric Weddle from WFYI in Indianapolis, thank you so much, and we'll follow this.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Tomorrow is the Friday Pitch-In, where we catch up on some of the biggest Indiana headlines of the week. We'll also hear about a planetarium in Muncie that has been doing a show on a theory surrounding where the Star of Bethlehem came from or what it might be. We'll also hear about a unity prayer service taking place on Monday between Christians and Muslims. That's tomorrow at this time on this station. I'm Matt Pelser. Thank you so much for listening. This is All In.